Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
DGS on KMOX. Join us in celebrating. We're just named the number 7 afternoon show in the country. That's pretty cool. I'll take it. Shoot for number 1, but hell, number 7 is pretty good for me.
Yeah.
Never been number 7 in anything.
Do you know how many shows there are?
Yeah.
In those markets? I mean, got to be hundreds.
Hundreds.
At least 7.
Yeah, at least 7.
Well, no, there's at least 20. Because the top 20 are ranked. No, it's got to be in the hundreds. Easy.
Dude, my phone, this is as bad as a phone has ever been. Cracked, chipped, but it's, I don't know if you guys feel like this. To me, getting a new phone is equal to going to the DMV or buying a new car or anything like that where you're like, oh, it's going to be so this or so that. I need a phone so bad, and I just keep not going.
You should do it.
Are you eligible for an upgrade?
I'm sure.
Yeah, well,
I'm
you're
sure.
probably going to get one not totally free. But
I don't
a
big even
discount.
Know who I'm with. Whoever Sprint turned into. And
Thank you have T-Mobile.
Okay. So
they're really good on those.
We're
things.
All on the same plan.
Yeah.
And last year we took Phoebe in to get a new phone, and hers was cracked. And they made her go get it fixed first using the insurance we have, then turn it in, and then get a new phone. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, they're probably not going to do that anymore.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. Well, I just if that's the company, because I just did that, I just switched to T-Mobile like a year and a half ago because my phone got broken, and I needed a new phone anyway. I was due, and we were going to change plans and do all that stuff, just because the old company we were with, the reception, the service was terrible where I lived. It was just like a little black hole in their coverage map. So we switched over, and my phone was, the reason I was doing it is because my phone was shattered. It wasn't working at all, and they just traded it right in.
Good.
Yeah. Of course, we were also starting a new plan and about to spend a whole lot of money with them over
That's
a number of years.
That's one thing I've never understood, just business in general, is, and I've experienced this a lot, we all have, especially online or on the phone with customer service. I get it if you're trying to get me to pay you. What I don't get is when I'm trying to give you my money. Like, if I owe you money and I'm running from you, I understand your attitude.
Right.
But when I'm trying to purchase something from you, why wouldn't you make it as absolutely easy as possible?
Yeah. In my experience, in that case, when I did this, it was like, again, it was a year and a half ago. It was easy. I went in, I did it all in maybe an hour. Like, but that was like broken phone, pick a new phone, sign up for the plan. Move my wife's number to that plan. I think we brought our mother-in-law into that plan. Like, we just, and it was, that was all done that easy.
You think they look at your pictures?
Yes. No, they didn't.
You think so?
I think they do.
Yeah, they didn't because the guy did it. We all did it.
Yeah, last
it
time
right
I did it, I just had to leave it there and give him my password and everything. And I'd already gone through and made sure there wasn't anything too bad. but it's still weird just having someone look at your family photos.
So I worked at a phone store. I saw some pictures I didn't want to see just because people would hand you their phone and their background would be like them nude in the mirror. And be
what?
Like, yeah, I'd be like, oh, you should take this off your phone. But then I remember talking to people who worked at another store, not Radio Shack.
Not the Shack.
Were like bragging about going through people's photos and finding girls' naked photos. And like, it was very disturbing to be like, oh, okay, well, yeah, just so you know, that's probably happening. So.
This has been a long time ago, like 10 years at least, but one of my friends took her phone in for something, and when she got it back, there were hundreds of naked women and hundreds, at least dozens, of people in caskets.
Whoa.
That there are some cultures where they take pictures of people in caskets with the family, and there were bunches of those that were on her phone. So they added pictures to her phone. That weird? Creepy?
Were they just searching for them on her phone, and that's how they ended there?
When I did it,
it wasn't this past fall, but it was the fall before that. I just did everything right there in front of you. It just happened, and we were doing that, downloading from the cloud, essentially, because that's what you're doing. And that was being done while we were doing paperwork and all that. I didn't have to leave the phone, nothing like that. Never out of my hands or out of my sight.
Wheels does everything perfectly as usual.
It may be that it's just newer because Wi-Fi is better, things are moving faster. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do things for 2 days. It happens in a half an hour.
Speaking of Stairway to Kevin,
sure. So there are a couple things I wanted to get into, but I want to pick this one because I think it's just an interesting conversation. So there was a professor at Dartmouth on Twitter the other day making an argument. Now he is not a professor of classic literature. Okay, that's not his area of expertise. But this is a college professor who was making an argument that we should be using more modern language translations for the classics.
Hmm.
So rather than reading Shakespeare in Shakespearean language, you would maybe learn more and enjoy it more if it was written in a more modern tone or a modern sense.
Never thought of that.
And he said if you were going to read a classic from another language, and then he said if you're going to read a classic book that was written in German, you're probably going to get a recent translation of it and read it more in a more modern way as opposed to reading it as it was written 100 years ago. And I wanted to ask you guys, do you think there's a point there? I'm not saying that this is a 100% foolproof point, but he's saying that he thinks people would enjoy it more, it would be less of a task, and you could focus more on the ideas and the imagery of these classic stories, mm-hmm. and less on what the hell does that mean? What are those words? Do I have to look that up? And he's even talking about it from an academic standpoint, not just an entertainment, not just people reading for their enjoyment, but he's saying high school students, part of the reason they hate reading these works is you're essentially reading a new language. You're learning a language, or at least part of it, just to understand what's happening in this book. The question, the way he got around to it, and he got slammed by a lot of people. But I think there's a fair point here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not 100% point. Maybe not if you're studying the classics. If you're a master's student or a PhD student or even undergrad, but you're studying that, no, you probably need to do the original work because it adds to the context, it adds to the understanding and all that. But if someone, what's the benefit to your average student to read a story in the way it was written 100 years ago, words and phrases and language that we don't use now?
When I was religious, I read the King James Bible, not the whole thing, but I studied that. And then I found like the Living Bible or some of the more modern translations, and it helped a ton. So if we can do that to the Bible, we can certainly do it to Shakespeare.
Yeah, or even like the further we go, even Mark Twain. Right? I mean, in another 20 or 30 years, that's going to be think how old that is. And people do not speak the same way. And I want to be clear. This is not a must. It's not I'll die on this hill. But I think there's a logic to it that if you want people to enjoy something, if you want them to not just do it because they have to, and not just half-ass it and use cliff notes because it's just more of a challenge, because reading a big, broad book is already in itself a challenge because it takes time. And when you add into that having to figure out what that word means and what these words mean together because people don't speak that way anymore, it creates an extra task that might not be necessary to your, again, to your average, like, say, high school student.
Last year, I wanted to read Journey to the West, which is an old, very, very old Chinese novel from like 1,000 years ago. And I bought and read was a newer translation of it from the last couple of years that uses slightly more like modernized language. And some of the dialogue is rewritten to be, you know, spoken as if it was spoken, you know, they didn't do a whole like Romeo plus Juliet kind of deal to it, but yeah, it was, and it made it great to read. It made it a lot easier to read. It made it enjoyable to read, and it wasn't the incredible chore that it would have been trying to parse a direct translation of, you know, 1,200-year-old Chinese.
Have you watched many of the updates to like Shakespearean movies, but they're done in modern day? Have you watched many of those?
Not many, but I've seen a couple. Yeah.
I mean, usually,
like the Claire Danes, Romeo and Juliet, like that, but that's a long time ago now.
Funny enough that I make that comparison, like Romeo plus Juliet, for example, used all of the exact same dialogue and writing from the
Yeah, I feel like Shakespeare is kind of a bad example. Like, if you want to change the sonnets, like, what's the point of reading the sonnets at that point? Like, it is beautiful language. Do you automatically understand everything? No, but you study it and you're gleaning something from that study. If it's one of the plays or something and you just want to get to the plot quicker, I guess that makes sense. But like poetry, I don't see the point in, for lack of a better term, like dumbing that down.
Part of reading like Hamlet or Macbeth is trying to understand exactly what he's getting at by what he's writing.
Yeah, to Rach's point, it might be like taking a Jackson Pollock painting and being like, why don't we make a dog in there?
Yeah.
I like dogs.
No, but I mean, what we're talking about, though, is when you're talking about an average, again, we're talking about students learning things that they're required to learn. Do we want to make reading things more difficult and discourage the act? Versus letting them see that it can actually be enjoyable, that it can actually be something you like doing, as opposed to, oh my God, I can't even understand this.
I think it's a good discussion.
You know, not 100% either. Like, I don't think there's no argument to be made that every book ever should be written like it's 2024 and, you know, using the modern slang. That's not really the point. But the point is that because language evolves and changes as much as it does, as fast as it does, and it seems to be changing faster than ever, what's the harm in more modern translations of very old works? If something's 400 or 500 years old, even if it's English, it's barely what we recognize as American English in 2024. And again, it's not saying that you have to do it 100%. And maybe it's more towards the basic learning of these things, as opposed to people that are taking an extra interest in it or are studying that as part of their curriculum in college. Because I guess the question, maybe if I boil it down, is this. Should we want these things to be more accessible? These classic works to be more accessible to more people?
But I guess the question then is, to make it more accessible, I mean, is the thing we're really trying to access like the plot of the book? Is that the ultimate lesson we're trying to learn, or is it working that muscle in your brain to figure that stuff out and get in the mindset that they were in when they wrote it?
Yeah, I would think more so, like when we study these things in English classes in high school and stuff, because we did mostly literature in my English classes, we weren't even talking plot as much as we were the message being sent.
But part of that is the language, right? Like,
eventually you got to do that translation in your head anyway. You got to say what could be, because a lot of these things are lessons about how people live and how human beings act and how they treat each other. They're not just it's not like the story of Romeo and Juliet is simply, oh, love can be painful and can be scary. There's a whole subplot about how cultures treat young men and how cultures treat young women and how families interact. And it's a lot of those lessons that are going to be lost if people just don't want to read it because there's too much of an obstruction.
But if instead of saying tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, Shakespeare had said, so basically there's like a lot of days, right? Like I just think, yeah, you have to make a translation in your head from what is being spoken into what the intent is. But I think that's like,
to what extent?
The way that we're learning these classics would be like making religious people read the Bible in Latin or in Greek in the original languages. It was originally the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. Originally, they were translated to Greek. We don't make people read them that way. We update the translations because it's not the stories or the plot that get lost. The lessons are the point, right?
Yeah, but back to the, Dave was the one who brought up the Bible thing, but I was thinking the same thing. The way I was raised, we only read the King James Version of the Bible. We didn't do NIV or any of that other stuff. And I never had a problem with it because I could just, once I learned to read in that way, I could just shift into that mindset. And it wasn't like, therefore, I don't know what that means, you know, like yeah. I was fine. So, I mean, I see what you're saying, Wheels. Like, I see about making it more accessible, but I also feel like there's so much value to working that muscle in your brain that does that little extra.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's no question. But it's, and again, especially for people that are going to pursue it beyond your high school English class when you're 17 years old. But the reason why the Bible is an interesting example of this is because I'm more familiar with all of that language, too, because I spent the vast majority of my childhood not just learning that in one class in school, but going to church on Sunday. And, you know, my uncle's a priest. So you're learning, you're getting basically nonstop schooling outside of school on that particular book if you're Christian. If you're, whether it's, it doesn't matter what variation of it, the Bible is still at the core of it. So that's it. That's more of part of your life as opposed to a book you're going to read in class. You know, like, that's not how Shakespeare is for your average American kid. You don't have the same grasp of that use of language as you would the biblical versions.
What if in 100 years they took our music and they changed it so that it was more accessible to those people, as opposed to listening to AC/DC or Led Zeppelin or Bob Dylan the way it was recorded?
We do that now, though, right? We do modern versions of old songs or
I don't think we changed the words, though.
Maybe not, but you certainly changed the sound of it. So if you were to take a band, because obviously, so how many rock bands just took old blues songs and made them their own? And all they did was play it their way, with their twists in a studio instead of in a small club somewhere. And it sounded different. And it was, maybe it was more, you know, more guitar, heavy bass, bigger drums, where maybe that blues song was just one guy and his guitar.
I think both should exist because I can see that if you were to read the updated version of something, it might interest you enough that you go read the original. Yeah. Probably rarely, because not that many of us are scholars. Yeah. But I could see that happening.
But again, thinking of it, again, just the idea that we're, and not everything and not across the board 100%, but thinking of it from that just general average high school student that is not going to study literature in college, but maybe there's something in that that they can gain value from that they're just missing now because it's too hard.
Yeah, could be. Feeling down and dirty, feeling kind of mean. Quick little segment here because I'm a bad clock manager. And see, that's why I'm number 7 and not number 6. Sir Steve will use that against me.
Yeah.
Traffic jams cost the average commuter 43 years of their life last year alone.
Wow. Wait, say that again?
Traffic jams cost the average commuter 43 hours of their life last year alone.
Okay, you said years originally.
You said the first time.
Oh, did I really?
And I was like, whoa, that is so upsetting.
We all had that same, we're like, wait, what?
All three of us felt like we were turning to dust all of a sudden. Like, oh, like,
no, wait, I'm about to die.
We're losing more time than we're even going through.
What happened last year?
Let's get the hell out of here. We're wasting our lives. Should have just went with it. Yep, 43 years.
Says right here, 43 years.
It's like Interstellar. It's like 27 years pass, and
we're
water's dead at you.
Every minute we're in this traffic jam, we're losing 10 years.
Just honking. I'm dying here. Welcome back, guys. DGS 334. Dave Murray is out today, but he has a live look, right?
Yeah, give me one second here to get it pulled up. Here we go.
Could not be with you live today. Get a little cortisone shot in my right knee because of a meniscus problem. It sounds bad, but it's not too bad, and it does really help. Weather-wise, you know the answer here. It's all about cold air, very cold air. The dome of Arctic high pressure is right over us tonight. So tonight is going to be the coldest of this stretch. 3 for the overnight low. Some folks away from the city could fall just a touch below 0 on Thursday. Lots of sunshine. Obviously, it's a really cold start on Thursday, but the winds are going to turn a little bit to the south. And even though they're going to be blowing over sleet and snow on the ground, I think we could get close to 32 degrees on Thursday afternoon. That will feel pretty good. Now, Thursday night and Friday, a very weak weather system is going to pass by to our south. Not a lot of moisture to work with. Lots of clouds Thursday night. Some light snow developing well after midnight. 25 for the low. And on Friday, periods of mainly light snow in the morning. And the focus, St. Louis south, the high on Friday, 32 degrees. I still kind of like very light amounts across St. Louis, a dusting to maybe an inch by the time it winds down around midday on Friday. The weekend is quiet, fair amount of sunshine and temperatures kind of hanging around the freezing point. So cold, yes, but nothing extreme. There you have it. I'll keep you up to date on the weather. Again, the system late Thursday night and Friday does not look like a big deal. Certainly weaker than what we're coming away with, but there will be a little bit of snow around. Talk to you tomorrow.
Hold on, I'm choking. Got choked up about hearing about his meniscus.
I know, Dave always makes me laugh because we don't want to get, you know, you don't want to out anybody or say anything that's like too personal. So we're like, Dave Murray has some personal issues. And then we whenever we get on with him, he's like, I'm getting my butt replaced today.
I need a butt replaced.
I'm getting a butt replaced.
Been sitting on it too much.
You know what's so great about this job for me is that you have to do it. Like, I had 3 minutes on break to go to the bathroom, get a drink, come back in, and start talking again.
Mm-hmm.
If I had any wiggle room, I wouldn't have come back. You feel me?
Yes.
Like, at normal jobs I've had before where they're like, okay, I'm going to need this done in the next week. I'm like, you got it, boss. And then, like, 6 days later, I'm like, I should get started on that.
Mm-hmm. Is that how it was in college?
The worst.
Yeah.
I was the worst. The only thing that has saved me, pardon me, academically, is that I'm a really good test taker.
Yep.
I'm really good at the whole, like, is it A, B, C, or D? Well, I know it's not A or D. It's B or C. And I think B is slightly better than, you know, I'm good at that. Keeping up with school, which is why I was a bad attorney. Like, when I was in court performing, as good as anybody else. Going back to the office, pulling out a file, doing a bunch of boring paperwork, awful. Awful. So what's great about this, it's all just performance. Not all, but you know what I'm saying.
A couple weeks ago, I described this job to somebody as a series of tiny deadlines.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Like, there's things have to just happen exactly when they need to happen, or else, like you said, like you had 3 minutes to go do all that stuff, and then if you don't come back, it's like, well, there just can't be a show, and that becomes a problem, and you know what I mean?
I was thinking about something the other day. I think this is interesting. I know Kevin will think it's interesting. I don't know about the rest of you. But in, like, the woo-woo kind of stuff, so I'm a big dreamer. I think everyone dreams, but I tend to remember a lot of mine, so I know that I dream a lot. And, you know, when you wake up from a dream, and there's a certain amount of time. I'm going to guess it's single seconds. But there's a certain amount of time where you still think the dream was real. And then you go, wow, that's crazy. I don't play for the Blues, or I can't gorilla run, or whatever it is.
But I could.
But there's a split second, and this is what intrigued me. There's a split second where it's equal. You equally believe the dream and reality, even though you're laying in your bed next to your spouse or whatever. You feel me? It probably only lasts half a second, but I find that so intriguing that if we could, like, bottle that there's a moment in time when the dream you had is just as much efficacy as being true as you laying in your bed. Kind of weird.
What I call that period of time right when I woke up, I feel like I'm sleep drunk. Like, I'm not in my right mind. So that's why, you know, think about it. If you've had too much to drink, sometimes you're seeing things that aren't there, or you're, you know, you're not perceiving reality the same way as a sober person next to you.
Yeah.
And I feel that way when I first wake up. And I think that's what you're describing, is that that in between, like, you're not focused yet. So both feel kind of real.
I've never had sleep paralysis. Thank God, because it sounds horrible. But I have had a couple of times, one that we've talked about on the show, where I woke up and standing, and I was awake, standing next to me was a 1950s wrestler in a wrestling singlet, kind of like that out of shape athlete kind of looking guy.
Like Dick the Bruiser.
Exactly like that. He had a burr haircut, and he was just throwing haymakers at me. And so I started punching him back. Now, I don't remember making contact, but I was fighting this 1950s wrestler in my bedroom, standing next to my bed, and I never went back to sleep. Does that make sense? I never woke up. Like, that happened in my waking few seconds. It's so weird. Now, you've had it, right? You've had sleep paralysis?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure that what you just described isn't sleep paralysis.
Oh, maybe you're right. Because, yeah, maybe you're right.
Because I've had sleep paralysis, and it's like, at the moment, I'm like, I am awake, and this is happening. And then later, it's like, well.
Hadn't thought of it that way.
I don't know the definition of sleep paralysis. Are you actually awake, or are you dreaming that you're awake?
You're dreaming that you're awake.
Okay.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure.
I always thought it the opposite. I always thought that you were awake.
Unless there's actually, like, someone in my room. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. I'm wondering if they're different things or they're just different versions of the same thing, because I've heard it described as you're awake, but you just can't move or talk.
That's the way I always think of it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've been through that before, but then it's also been like, and there's a figure in the corner of the room, and like,
which clearly there's not.
Yeah, clearly there's not, so I just assume I'm actually sleeping at that point.
In however you would define it, how long does that usually last for you, or has it lasted?
It was weird. It was only in this one place I was living that I would have this sleep paralysis situation.
Interesting.
Yeah. It felt like it lasted forever, but I'm sure it was like 30 seconds to a minute.
I'd have been haunted.
Yeah. Anyone ever lived anywhere that you really thought was haunted? Andrew, I know you have.
Oh, yeah. Mineral Springs is haunted as heck. It's spooky in there. I can't believe I used to like get home at 1 a.m. when all the lights were off and just walk down that long hallway in the dark.
What's the most?
Did you ever see or hear anything?
Yeah. What's the most impressive thing that happened to you?
To be totally honest, nothing. I never felt anything or saw anything or experienced anything. But I mean, I think there's enough of a pedigree there, and enough. You know, I mean, enough things happened just while we were there doing the. So there you go. The scariest thing that happened to me was 5 years after I moved out doing the
show,
Halloween show. Yeah.
So I've always wondered this about hauntings and haunted places. If you had no idea that there were stories about a place, would you even be perceiving anything? Or is it that obvious? Like, nope, there's something here and stuff's moving and I had no idea.
I have one example of that. So I did 3 or 4 Halloween shows from the Limp Mansion. Life magazine called it the most haunted place in America. It's known for being haunted, the whole thing. When I was, I think, a teenager, I went there for dinner with a girlfriend's family, and I didn't know any of that history.
Oh, okay. You just thought it was a place
to eat. I just thought it was a cool place, cool old mansion. And I went upstairs looking around, and there was one of the bedrooms that I wasn't prevented physically from walking in, but it was so suffocating for some reason that I didn't go into the bedroom. And it was only later that I heard the whole, like,
all right,
suicides and hauntings and things like that.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you this. Like, I would have to be paid a pretty good amount of money to spend the night in the Limp Mansion alone, or the Sally House, or some of these places we've been on the Halloween show. And I'm an agnostic, I'm a skeptic, but I would have a hard time spending the night by myself. Would you be able to do it anywhere?
I think. I've never experienced anything, so I don't have any preconceived ideas. So I don't know. I mean, if I'm sitting there in the middle of the room and the doors are slamming and doing all that, I might sit there and go, all right, well, something's going on. I probably should leave.
Rach, how about you?
I'm just picturing like Wheels' head spinning on his neck.
Yeah,
like,
what if I became that?
Let's go. I better leave. Would I be able to stay at one of those places? I certainly wouldn't want to. But I think I'd be able to get through the night. Yeah.
Because what I'm thinking of is the way that I brought this up, I think, a few weeks ago, but we kind of know how Ouija boards work, right? It's the mind
portal to hell
doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there's not spirits in the little cardboard and plastic thing. You know, it's people who are the people that are touching it. Their minds are the ones that are making it move. And it's a subconscious thing. It's the same concept.
Your mind is communicating with the demon.
It's
yeah,
the same concept as blinking, where you're not consciously deciding to blink. You just blink.
Oh, now you did it to
me. So it's one of those.
I'm just going to blink the whole show.
He's going to blink naturally again.
Yeah, God.
Good thing I didn't say breathing. You'd be like, oh,
boy. Here comes the heartbeat.
So, like, that's what I wonder about it. But I don't know because I've had no experience. I've used a Ouija board before. I've done that. We did that in college all the time. And it was, you know, fun and wild and people were freaking out. And it was kind of hilarious. But I never thought that's a spirit speaking through this thing I just bought at Toys R Us.
So now we know for 30 years he's been possessed by an overly confident demon.
Yep. There you go. We figured it out. Finally, we got it out of him.
There's some demon named Ned in hell, and all the demons are like, I hate this guy. He thinks that he's Satan's favorite. And they're like, hey, let's put him in this cat.
A demon whose specialty is Ouija boards, and the demon's like, Ouija boards like don't even work. So, like, you know.
Yeah, my name is Cardboardius.
Don't even, you know, bother.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know,
it's not like those are the only things that can defeat demons or anything, all right? So just like throw them
all
in the trash.
We all know the demon world is linked through all the things you can buy at toy stores.
I guess I'm weird.
I do actually believe that. Yeah.
I really could spend the night in a haunted house and not be. I mean, if like some conjuring stuff starts happening, I'm out of there. But like just the knowledge that a house is haunted, I think I could. Because I don't sleep anyway, so it's not like it's going like to affect me that much. So, yeah. But, like, I will not touch a Ouija board for... It would have to be a lot of money for me to do that. Like, a lot.
Do you really... Do you believe it's, like, spirits?
I don't think I'm meant to be messing with stuff like that. I feel like I've been fairly warned that it's the wrong thing to do, and if I go messing around with stuff like that, it's my own fault if something happens.
If... So I'm trying to think of the right way to put this because it's an interesting thing. Do you think it's bad either way, whether it's spirits or it's just psychological energy or subconscious movements that are happening because of the people that are? Do you think that could be negative either way?
Hmm.
Even if it's not spirits, it could still be a negative experience.
Yeah, I would say that. And the other weird thing is like we used the Ouija board on stage at the Fox, my first Halloween show, and I didn't touch it, but I wasn't sitting there like, oh my gosh, Liz is gonna go to hell now. Like if other people use it, I don't necessarily think something bad's gonna happen. I just think something terrible is gonna happen to me if I use it.
Yeah, I'm in the middle. I wouldn't go out of my way to do a Ouija board.
Well, it's a lot less interesting to me now that I know how it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it is still fascinating because the mind can do things you're not aware of. I find that to be maybe some people, the guy that did the study or somebody that wrote about that study said it might even be scarier than if it's actually spirits, that your mind is doing things and it's processing things and it's making your body move and you don't know it's doing
it. It's one thing, like I've never seen this happen, but I've read stories and heard people who called into the show say that it like spells things out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like my name is Frank.
Yeah.
You'll ask a question in 1952.
And the planchette moves.
To me, that has to be, I've always thought, either a demon or some member of the group cheating. Like, it's hard for me to imagine, to your point, it's almost more unbelievable than demons.
Right.
That my subconscious mind created Frank.
Mm-hmm. Or somebody else's. Yes. Like, but the fact is that just the knowledge, and this is scientifically studied, our mind does do things without our knowing it.
Most things.
And it makes our body do things that we don't know it's doing.
Yeah, like 80% of things we do.
All right, back in on DGS. Speaking of the mind manifesting things that otherwise might not be there.
Oh, I see him coming.
We were literally joking, what was it, maybe a half an hour ago about, we were joking about how the mind manifests things. So the mind, when we were talking earlier about this is the thing that forces you to be in the room, and you were joking that maybe...
And you know what kept me out of it?
Yeah.
Our boss.
Yeah, it always is that way.
I knew it.
It's always that way. But isn't it funny, though?
That's the number one thing.
That almost never happens, but we just talked about it, and then it happens.
No, swear to God. I happened to walk by his office. He's like, hey, come here.
And you're like, well, you know what time it is. You're the boss.
You have a watch? Yeah, I knew. I'm like, you develop a finely tuned sense of time. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I'm pretty good Spidey sense. I can tell, like, I think we're coming back. And I'm like, I think we're coming back. And Steve's like, what'd you think of the meeting today? I'm like, should probably get back on the show.
Yeah.
I do that every day when I take my shower. I'm like, I try to guess what time it is as I'm getting out. And I'm crazy accurate. Like, it's very, very rare that I'm off. And I think it's just because of radio stuff. You know what I mean?
You and Andrew are interesting shower takers.
One's predicting time and the other one is sitting and singing.
But they catch you.